Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to How to Be Sound, a podcast where I, writer and journalist Rosemary McCabe, chat to people I think are sounder than I am, to learn about their lives and hope that it will help me be better at mine. I've been away on a little bit of a hiatus. I mean, you probably haven't noticed. I always think it's funny when people are like, you've probably noticed I've been away and you've been too busy living your own lives. But I am back now. A quick note, if you haven't already, you can sign up to my Patreon from $1 a month and you get to read three personal essays, which from January on, I will be recording each and every piece that I upload on Patreon. So if you're a podcast listener and that's what you do in your commute, you can also listen to my Patreon pieces from January through your earphones. So if that's something you're interested in, head to patreon.com/Rosemary McCabe. Now, onto the episode. Today, I am joined by Colette Kinsella, radio producer, podcaster, cat owner. Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
Messer. Total chancer.
Colette, tell me a bit about the radio work that you do and the podcast that you produce so that people can get a flavour for your interests.
Right. Well, I suppose the radio work that I do is, I suppose, anything that people throw money at me for. But what I'm really interested in is I do some nature stuff. I do a lot about science as well. On radio, I've done a few hour-long series for Radio 1. And then I do reports, occasional reports for Radio 1 and other places too. I do occasional series for places like ABC in Australia. And then I make two podcasts. One podcast is called Science Drops. And that's a teeny tiny 90 second episode, or it's a teeny tiny series of 90 second episodes. And the other one I make with the amazing Colly Ennis. It's called The Critter Shed. And we sit in his critter shed, which is literally full of critters of all shapes and sizes and multi-legged, and we talk about them. And then occasionally we get outside and we talk to other people who have interests in things that aren't, you know, things that are mammals and whatever. So that's me.
And where did the animal nature science background come from? Like, do you have a background in biology, zoology, or was this a happy accident of life?
God, I don't know. I suppose I've always been interested in animals. I've always been mad about animals. So as a kid, we just had dogs and cats at home. But, you know, I was out the back garden looking at birds and spiders and all that sort of stuff. Then I really, in secondary school, I really wanted to do a science degree, but I was too thick. I just wasn't getting the points. And I remember sitting in the room of, what do you call those people who are supposed to help you to find out what you want to do?
The guidance counsellors.
Guidance counsellors. And I was saying,
they always
just
tell you to be a teacher, I think.
Oh, for God's sake. This woman, actually, I just told her, yeah, really interested in science. So she picked up a catalogue of science courses that were on the go. And actually what I really wanted to do, I wanted to do either zoology or marine biology in Galway. Or I wanted to be a vet, which I'm actually glad now I didn't do that. And something else with science or animals. And she flicked through all these things. So we put down my main preferences first. I got none of those.
Oh.
And then she came across this degree. She says, yeah, this has science and microbiology, blah, blah, blah. I put that down. That was my fourth choice. That's what I got. Do you know what it was? I didn't even know what I had signed up for until I turned up in college. A health inspector. No offense to health inspectors. We need them. But it just wasn't me. So I actually signed up for something. I had no idea what I was signing up for.
And did you do the degree?
I did. It was a 4-year science degree. And yeah.
How was that?
Odd. There was a lot of drinking. There was a lot of not going to college. There was a lot of skipping like statistics class and wearing lab coats. And it was just odd, an odd degree.
Is that the same kind of health inspector that my mom like calls me every 2 weeks and goes, you never see what's been shut down. She's obsessed with this. Is it the same people who go into restaurants,
it
basically?
Is, yeah, yeah. So the health inspectors, when we were coming up, they would do the restaurants, but they also do things like housing. So they would inspect council housing and make sure anywhere where people live and work and socialise essentially is up to standard and is not going to kill you. That's more or less what they do, which is actually a very interesting job.
Yeah.
But back then, it wasn't
really
what you wanted to do. No, it wasn't. In fact, I didn't know what I wanted to do. Who does? Well, maybe some people do at 18. I certainly didn't.
Do you ever now walk into someone's house and go, this wouldn't pass?
Well, when I moved into our house, which is a very unusual house because it's in Dublin Zoo, and because my boyfriend is the director and he has a house right on the grounds, and we have a cat called Daisy. And when Daisy came she got her name because every time she jumped up on the countertops, I would take out the Tesco branded Daisy detergent to clean it down. Because I was so obsessed with these filthy little paws all over the place. So eventually we just decided to call her Daisy. But that stopped after about 2 months and now I don't give a crap.
I thought you were going to say she stopped jumping on the counters.
Oh God, no, she's taken over the house.
Let's go back a bit because I do want to hear about living in a house on the zoo, which sounds like the start of an Enid Blyton novel. But tell me about how you met your partner who's the director of the zoo.
Oh God. I had lived abroad for many years and worked in various jobs. When I moved back to Ireland in 2006, I did a master's in journalism and realised I wanted to be a radio producer. So I got my first gig making packages, and I didn't want to be a live producer. I wanted to make these crafted pieces that would go out as little self-contained stories on radio. So I got my first gig making pieces about science for The Mooney Show on RT Radio 1. And they were essentially pop questions. Pop science questions. So why is the sky blue, or why does it rain so much in Ireland, or why do we have waves? And one of the questions I wanted to find out the answer to was, you know the way when birds fall asleep on a branch but don't fall off?
Oh.
Why is that? Like, why? I was under pressure to make these things. I was new to the business, so I was under pressure. So I rang the zoo. The only place I could think of to actually maybe talk to somebody who might have that answer. There was nobody there, so I left an email. I left a voicemail, and it must have sounded weird. Hi, I'm a journalist. I was just wondering, is there anyone there who could tell me how birds' legs work? So I got a call back from this guy. It was a mobile phone number, and I had looked up how birds' legs worked, so I knew what the answer was roughly. But this guy, beautiful, deep voice, explained in the most amazing terms how birds' legs worked and how they wouldn't fall off because when they hunkered down, they had all these beautiful tendons that pulled up their toes and made them clutch the branch ever more tightly if they were, you know, the lower they hunkered down. And he was such a good storyteller that I had to meet him. I had to just go up and get his voice on tape. And I asked him, can I interview you for this? And he said, look, I don't have time. And I begged him because I was under a lot of pressure. I had a deadline. So I hopped on my bike, lashed up to the zoo. He had 15 minutes for me, met him at the gate. Hour and a half later, we're still sitting in his office. He did an amazing interview. And I have to say, I was pretty smitten the first time I met him. But I had to stalk him for 6 months because he didn't know
6 months
that he was also smitten with 6 months. Yeah,
he didn't know.
So I made up all these outlandish excuses to go back and visit the zoo. So I came up with this idea to make a program called Conversations in the Dark about what animals sound like at night and what they do at night in the zoo. And I rang him up and he goes, oh yeah, that sounds really good. Why did you come around on Saturday at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon? I go, Conversations in the Dark. Oh, right. Yeah, come around at 8. I thought, yes. So I went around at 8 o'clock and we had the most wonderful walk around the zoo. And
hang on, were you actually making this program?
Or I was actually making this program.
Okay, good, because that was, yeah, okay.
We had the most wonderful walk around the zoo and he was just an incredible guy. But again, it took him another 6 months to find out that I was the one for him. So I made that program, but I kept coming back. I had excuses to make more audio and get more stuff. And at the end of every session, he would invite me into his office for a cup of tea. And then about 6 months after I started this ruse, he invited me in through this red door. And there was a whole lot of bikes and boots and stuff downstairs. And we were just taking off our wellies. And I said, oh, where are we? He said, oh, this is where I live. I just thought, yes, I'm in. So we went upstairs and we had the best crack. We just had there was no food in the house. We hadn't been to Tesco or the delivery hadn't arrived. So we had tea and digestives and the best crack. And as I was leaving, I said to him, call me. I'm not calling you anymore. And he goes, OK, I will. And the next week we had our first date. And it was in the science gallery. And I moved in 8 months later.
I'm surprised you didn't move in that initial 6 months. So you didn't just wake up and you were like, I live here now.
Yeah, I probably would have if I'd found a way in.
And like, what's it like? Okay, so practically speaking, living in the zoo, I presume it's cordoned off from the rest of the zoo. Is it? If you know what I mean.
Well, it's actually, there is a garden that separates us from the zoo, but essentially we're on display because it's a big Victorian house that overlooks the lake and people pass by as they're going from the restaurant into the zoo. So they actually can look up at our house. And it's a feature there because it was built in 1868. And historically, every person who has ever run the zoo has lived there. So it's got an amazing history to it. And there's a sign in front and all that sort of stuff. So we have this thing where we're standing at the window. We see people walking up to the sign that tells them about the house. And we wait 5, 4, 3. And then they look up. And then there we are waving at them. So we're in the zoo essentially. So we get the full gamut of people passing by, which I quite like. I like the sounds of the kids and, you know, there's just a lovely buzz. And then, of course, we get these wonderful animal sounds, which are, oh God, it's hard to describe what they are because I've been living there for 8 years and now I'm so used to it, but I still love it. And I can't imagine not hearing those sounds. Like I might be in town sometimes and I'll hear a sound and I go, wow, the elephants are out. And then I go, gee, I have to get used to not living in the zoo at some point.
Well,
not every sound
in.
Is an animal sound.
Yeah. You're tuned into a certain frequency. Yeah. That's so interesting. And like when you first moved in, do you remember, like, did you find it hard to sleep?
No. I mean, I lived in Cairo, for God's sake. I mean, if you can sleep in Cairo, you can sleep in sleep anywhere. No, it was amazing. It was really exciting. I think the sounds that got me most first were the wolves. You know that, I actually have the hackles almost standing up in the back of my neck at the moment. Because you know that sound that just is so otherworldly and you don't think you're ever going to hear it outside your window.
TV, but like, like outside of TV, outside of documentaries.
And then I spent many months at night trying to identify the different sounds that I'd hear. What animal is that? And occasionally, a few nights, I got up in the middle of the night just to walk into the zoo to see what the hell was making the noise. I was so curious to find out who was making that noise that I'd walk into the zoo and find out.
So can you get into the zoo from... Yeah. And can you just wander in whenever you want?
Sort of, yeah. I have to let the security guys know, but...
Oh, could you be sneaking your mates in to look at the wild lights?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, you could be selling counterfeit tickets. I've often thought about doing that with I've often thought about doing that with parking permits during when there's matches on in Croke Park.
See, I'd never thought about that.
You could do the wild lights. You're obviously not as entrepreneurial as I am. That's what it is.
Maybe I'm just honest. No,
well,
entrepreneurial.
Listen. Where do you stand on what do you think or what do you say when people argue that the concept of the zoo itself is wrong or is cruel or unethical? I mean, I know you're not the director of the zoo as well, so I'm not like I don't want to put you on the spot.
Yeah.
But I also feel like it's something that I really struggle with because when I was younger, I loved the zoo and I went to Wild Lights last year and I thought it was amazing. But I haven't been to the zoo in a couple of years because I kind of can't really get my head around the idea of certain animals being in captivity. And I mean, to a certain extent, I can understand the ideas about conservation and breeding programs, and I think that's really great. And I also think it's the zoo is a really incredible place for kids to go with their families that isn't like the pub or that isn't a shopping center, and to learn about the world and to learn about animals. And I think that's really valuable. But I do really grapple with the kind of idea of, like, I think anybody in their 30s and 40s will remember.
Oh God, yeah.
When we were very young. How awful it was. And there was this one polar bear. Do you remember that polar bear?
Yeah.
There was a polar bear that used to take 2 steps forward and 2 steps back. And that was all it did all day. And it was in a very small enclosure. It was probably the size of like a 2-bedroom, you know, the average 2-bedroom house. It was tiny.
It was awful. I remember the chimps as well, just sort of swinging on their bars. I remember everything being in cages. But I totally see where you're coming from, because before I met Leo, before I got to know what Dublin Zoo was all about, I would never go to a zoo. I've sort of been to a few zoos around the world because just, you know, maybe marking time somewhere, waiting for a bus or something. And they're just awful experiences. In many places, they're horrible. But since I've learned about Dublin Zoo, my conscience has definitely been appeased because of Dublin Zoo. Now, I can only speak about that zoo because that's the one I know.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that animals are now kept in places like Dublin Zoo, or specifically in Dublin Zoo, it's all centered around what the animal needs. And in the olden days, it used to be about keeping the place clean. So having the animals on concrete, and they didn't evolve on concrete.
Oh, yeah.
So they're very uncomfortable.
Oh, my God, there was so much concrete.
So much concrete. And there were cages everywhere and there were bars. And the bars are gone. And it's all about what does the animal need? So we have this discussion a lot about how much space you should give to an animal, especially when you have an animal at home as well. But it's not always just about the amount of space. It's what can that animal do in a space? I mean, you and I could sit in Croke Park together and it was empty and we'd be bored out of our trees. But if there was something to do in Croke Park or in a smaller space, if there was, you know, just things to...
Something to do in Croke Park in the sounds corner. Like a nightmare to me. There'd be a lot of walking. I'd rather sit in a metre square, but like...
Exactly. So if you're in a large space where there's nothing to do, it's boring. So now it's all about trying to recreate as much as possible the habitats that these animals would normally experience in the wild. And none of the animals in the zoo are wild born. They're all zoo born. So that's what the ethos is. So it's a very, particularly in Dublin Zoo since Leo took over, the ethics of keeping these animals has been copper fastened, and it's all about the animal and what the animal needs. It's a no-kill zoo. A lot of zoos, as we know from the thing that happened in Denmark a while ago, a lot of zoos kill animals if they're surplus to requirements.
If they've overbred them.
Yeah. And they have their various reasons for justifying that, and some people agree with it and some people don't. In Dublin Zoo, they've gone the route where we don't have the right to tell animals when their lives are over. Mm. So unless they're in a lot of pain, and then they have discussions about it, and it's a big decision. So to get back to the original thing of where I stand on zoos, if I know a zoo is ethical, if I know that they look after animals properly, that their animals are not bored, and that it's about the animal, then I'm down with it. And I've learned a lot since I started doing the Critter Shed as well. I would be mostly adamantly against people keeping exotic pets. But now that I've started doing this Critter Shed with Colly Ennis, who really knows how to look after his exotic pets, and he does on a much smaller scale what Leo does and the team do in Dublin Zoo, which is, it's not about the space, it's about how to keep these animals happy and what they need. And so I still think not everybody has the right to keep animals, because I think animals have rights too, and we shouldn't just assume that we can do whatever we want with them. But as long as they're being kept properly and looked after and they have stimulation, and it's not just about keeping them alive, but it's giving them something to do,
giving them a life.
Exactly, yeah. Life worth living. Then it's fine, you know.
I think I only met Collie a couple of weeks ago, so we're all on the same podcast network. And I met him a couple of weeks ago, and I started following him on Twitter. And it's
hilarious.
He is hilarious, but he's very informative as well. And following him has really made me think, actually, most people shouldn't keep exotic animals.
I agree.
Because, like, seeing some of the things that he shares, where he's going, oh, this is what you should do with this. Most people do not have the time or the attention or the desire to give, you know, the focused attention and time that they needed to these animals. And I think he was sharing a couple of weeks ago, people had shared some geckos or lizards that they had for sale on Dundeal. And he was comparing them to healthy. And he was basically saying, this gecko is starved. Like, this lizard is completely vitamin D deprived. Like, you know, whatever it was, they were like, these haven't been kept well. And it reminded me of a couple of years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I found, is it a tortoise? Like one of the small ones? A turtle?
Dunno. Oh. Was it in water?
It was, I don't really know. Basically, somebody had dumped it by the canal.
Oh, God.
Near where my parents live. And it was in the grass beside the canal. So it had kind of crawled out, and we brought it home, and it died within about 24 hours. We brought it home and we looked up like what to do with it. And my dad put it in a big tank with kind of some water at the bottom. Yeah. And I think put it in like near the boiler room so it'd be a bit warm, because we didn't have lights and we didn't have anything for this animal. Do you know what I mean? So we were kind of going, what are we doing? We'll bring it to the DSPCA. But when I posted about it online, I was like, you know, I found this, like, is this wild or is this? And people were going, no, they're not wild. People just dump them. Like, people get sick of them and they drop them in the canal because they didn't realize that they're going to live for,
well, forever. 20, I mean, 30, way 40, past 50 years. Our lifespan.
Yeah.
I totally agree. In my work, in the small stuff that I do on radio and podcast, I try to subvert the notion that we have, that animals are there for us to use. Now, not everybody believes that, but I think it's a lot of people would just assume, yeah, they're sort of there for us and we can do what we want with them and we can buy a dog, buy a cat, and we use the word ownership. And I try to not, I don't want to be pushy or didactic, but I just try to show the other side that animals are actually individuals and that they didn't evolve just to be our playthings. And I'm very much against, like, I hate these bloody videos that go around the internet of cute little animals doing things that are, that make them look like teddy bears, because dogs and cats and other animals, they're not teddy bears. They're not toys. They have their own lives and they have their own rights, and that really gets up my nose. So in my own work, I try to talk about animals not how we can exploit them or eat them or cook them or whatever, but hey, aren't they great? And they were here before we were. They evolved in a different way and they're just bloody cool. So let's just look at them in a way that we're partnering with them instead of exerting ownership or dominion over them.
Yeah. I think it's kind of that Spider-Man thing that it, like, it's more a responsibility than a right.
Yeah.
Like looking after an animal, taking an animal into your home. Like, people sometimes ask me, or, you know, I'll see people saying, we're thinking of getting a dog, right? And 99% of the time I will tell them not to.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait until you have a baby and then you have to be in the house anyway.
Yeah.
Wait until you have a baby and then you have to really carefully plan your weekends away anyway. Because when you have a dog, and I mean, I kind of knew this on paper, but didn't know it in the lived experience kind of way. Like, you can't just take an impromptu weekend away. Mm. You can't decide to stay out all day because you've met a friend and you're having coffee and you're going to have a mulled wine and it's Christmas because your dog's been at home for 6 hours.
Yeah, and people don't realise that you can't leave a dog alone for an entire working day, or you shouldn't, that it's torture for them.
And I mean, also, I think in a way, until I got a dog of my own as an adult, I didn't really realise that dogs had distinct personalities.
Right.
I kind of thought there were like good dogs and bad dogs.
Yeah.
And that was, and good dogs were always happy to see you, and bad dogs were bad and like would be snappy. And there was no in between. Like, I would kind of categorize it as my parents had a nice Labrador and my friend had a Jack Russell. And I was like, that's a bad dog. It's really yappy and it's not very friendly, whereas our dog's a good dog.
Yeah.
And it was only when I got older that I realized, because my dog's a bit of an asshole. That's just her personality. Like, she's like a 2-year-old who's just very belligerent, where you'll kind of say to her, hey, come here. And she'll look at you. And she'll look at your left hand and your right hand and be like, you don't have anything. I'm not coming. Like, she's very, you know, headstrong.
Mm.
And like, I didn't realize kind of that dogs would have personality traits. And like, my mom as well is funny. She's like, you talk to that dog like that dog. You think that dog has a personality. And I'm like, of course that dog has a personality. But it's the kind of generational thing where she just does not get it at all.
Yeah. And I have 3 cats and they are all very, very distinct. 3 completely different personalities, and some of them get on, some of them are just like, the female obviously is the smartest one. The 2 lads are very different again. One is really shy, the other one is a total charisma, you know, superstar guy. He greets everybody, and they're individuals.
And how do they like living in the zoo?
Well, they don't get into it very much because they're indoor cats, and I keep them indoors because
you live on the zoo.
Cats are great predators. Yeah, see, everyone thinks that I don't let them out because they get killed. But no, they would just kill too many things. I mean,
I wasn't thinking about them getting killed necessarily. I was just thinking about them causing a ruckus.
Yeah, that too.
And tearing also, around the place.
And also, it's sort of a quarantine area, essentially. So you can't be bringing filthy, parasite-ridden animals into them from the outside.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't let them out because I don't want to kill birds and squirrels and all that sort of stuff. But one of them goes out in a leash. And I used to bring him into the zoo back before I wasn't allowed to. And he brought me down to the lions one time. I just follow him on the leash, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And he sort of wandered down to where the lions were. And the lions got a whiff of him before he even saw them, right? And so he's like heading towards his big cousins. And they're on the other side of this bush. They're literally going, there's something tasty coming down here. Normally he never wants to go home. But as we turned around this bush, and he just saw these enormous 4 enormous felines looking at him. He just froze and then turned tail and boom, all the way back to the house. And I'm like this tiny little black and white yoke on the end of a leash, and I'm lashing after him. But apart from that, that was I think he was only in the zoo twice, and then we realised it's not a good idea to take him in for quarantine. That was years ago though. So anyway, they're indoor cats, but they have plenty of space, and I make sure that they're entertained. Plus, they go outside with me. Ted goes out in the leash, and they're grand. They're happy.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't have cats if I didn't know I was going to be able to keep them happy, you know?
Yeah, yeah. My sister, I mean, cats are kind of one of the things, I think people think they can get a cat and leave the cat alone for the weekend.
Yeah, they,
and like, they're not. And, like, technically, you can. Like,
yeah, they do need company, though.
And, yeah.
They do need company.
Yeah, they need company and they need stimulation. My sister got a cat, a kitten, for her oldest son. He's really good with the cat, like, and he loves the cat and he plays with the cat and the cat sleeps with him and he takes the cat up to bed and he takes the cat down in the morning and the two of them say good morning. And but they bought a leash because he wanted to bring the cat out in the garden. And he's 7, right? But he just will not understand that the cat is not a dog.
Yeah.
So he wants to lead the cat around by the leash. And
doesn't work like that.
No, and like, I keep trying to tell him, you're just going to have to wait for the cat to move. And he keeps trying to like pull the cat and the cat's like, what is going on? I don't want to be out here. And he's like, come over here, Vinny. And he's like trying to pull the cat over to the swings. And you're like, no, the cat like is not interested. But basically we couldn't find a cat harness. So we ended up buying him a dog harness and he can worm out of it.
Oh, right.
In like a flash without, yeah, you noticing. And I don't think he really knows how, but it just happens by accident. And at one stage he wormed out of it and went legging it out like across the garden. And we caught him. Another day, the 3-year-old chance opened one of the back windows and we were all down the sitting room. My sister suddenly went, who opened this window? I did it. and we're like, okay. And she goes, where's Vinny? And none of us could find Vinny. So we all go out in the garden. We're all calling Vinny. I'm like rustling his food. Nash is sitting in a corner with his hands on his knees, bawling his head off, like, aww, unhelpfully. Like, Nash, cry later. Let's like try and find the cat. And we're all like running around and Chance is just running around going, Vinny gone. Vinny not coming back. Vinny not coming back. Bye-bye, Vinny. And you're like, Jesus Christ. But anyway then, so we literally spent like 25 minutes looking for this cat. And then eventually I walked back around the back of the house and in the doorway, so yeah, I couldn't tell if he had even gone out.
Yeah.
In the doorway, he was just sitting there looking at me like, what are you all doing out here? And it kind of made me think, oh, he's actually all right being in the house.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because he was just like sitting in the doorway going, it's cold out there. Like, yeah. What are you all doing? While Chance was around the front going, bye-bye.
They sleep 18 hours a day. That's your thing. That's how they conserve energy. So, you know.
Yeah. Oh, it's very cute. So, what's next? You said you've been in the zoo for 8 years, but you're moving on.
Well, we are. Yeah. So, when Leo retires, we're moving. So we're moving out.
That's really mean. So you don't get to stay. It is
very mean. No, it's very, very mean. I think we should have like house for life privileges at this stage. You know. I mean, it does worry me because I haven't had neighbours in 8 years, apart from, you know, the president. But and I will never be able to use that in a sentence again. Our neighbor, the president. This is one of the last times I'll ever be able to use that in a sentence. But it's going to be odd. I remember I was over in I was somewhere in town and I looked up at the top of a tree and I saw what it turned out to be a plastic bag sort of at the top of this tree. And I thought, oh, wow, the red pandas were out early today. And then I thought, oh my God, how am I going to adjust to life in the real world with neighbours, and with neighbours who actually make human sounds as opposed to lovely animal sounds. But we're thinking of moving to the Netherlands because Leo's Dutch.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, so it's going to be great
fun.
Very
good at recycling over there.
Very good at recycling. And lots of other things too. Great design and just good at lots of things.
And do you speak Dutch?
Not yet.
I know how to say tonight is vanavond.
Is it?
Yeah, because I used to be able to say, basically, will you kiss me tonight? Because there were these Dutch guys on a campsite and I wanted to try and impress. So I think vanavond is tonight and like doei is goodbye. Doei.
Yeah, I used to live in Germany, so I speak German. And I think you're sort of, you have a good head start when you speak
Irish
German.
Yeah, then you'd be grand.
Yeah, be grand. At the moment, my Dutch is still very German and Leo cracks up when I try to speak it. Likewise, when he tries to speak German.
I went on a few dates with a Dutch guy, so I enthusiastically downloaded Duolingo and started learning Duolingo, like Dutch. But all I ever learned was like, can I have an apple?
And she, are we splitting the bill?
He is eating an apple. No, I don't think we ever got to, are you splitting the bill? Because like, Duolingo is obsessed with apples. Honestly, all it is apple. I was trying to practice my Italian as well because I have a degree in Italian and I was trying to kind of top it up on Duolingo. I never got past like, io mangio una mela.
So you're good. You can order apples in how many languages now?
Ooh. English, Irish, French, Italian, probably Spanish.
That's good going.
And Dutch.
That's good going.
But like,
the apple based.
I never want an apple on my holidays. I just want to go to McDonald's.
I don't even like apples.
Oh.
They make me sick. But yeah, Dutch, it's going to be fun.
So Netherlands.
The Netherlands.
It's actually so nice. And like,
it is, but there's, the Dutch are very direct.
Oh, yeah, totally.
One of my colleagues over in the Netherlands, I was telling her where we were going to live, and she goes, oh yeah, that place. Yeah, my husband's from there. It's so boring. And every Dutch person I've told since that we're moving to this particular area, why would anybody want to live there? Well, clearly somebody wants to live there. We do. So, and but they're quite direct. And I think, I mean, having lived in Germany where the Germans are direct, but God, yeah, they're not as direct as the Dutch. Absolutely not.
Yeah, but I think weirdly, from my perception of this Dutch guy that I went on three dates with, and then my large perception of Germany having been there once, I feel like Dutch people are more direct, but slightly more laid back.
Yeah.
In a weird way.
I think so, yeah.
Like Germans are very direct, but also kind of straight-laced, or, you know, kind of rigid in a way that the Dutch aren't as much.
That's what I feel too. And I used to work for a Dutch company when I lived in the Netherlands, when I lived in Germany, and I'd go over two or three times a week and we had great crack. It was much more laid back in the office than in, say, German offices that I'd worked in. And was all, so in Dutch and German, you have the two forms of you. There's one formal version and one informal. The Dutch had just always used the informal.
Oh, whereas the Germans use the formal.
Yeah, until a certain point. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, it's a great adventure. This is my fourth country now to live in. And Leo's been all over the world as well. So for him, it's like he's going back to his roots to get to know his own culture, which is exactly what I did when I moved here. I moved back in 2006. So it's going to be an adventure for both of us.
Yeah, in totally different ways. And when is this happening?
Whenever he can find his replacement. Okay. But I suspect perhaps next year, like maybe March, April, May, something like that.
Wow, so it's very exciting.
It is very exciting.
I mean, daunting, I'm sure,
yeah,
but also exciting. And what will that mean for the critter shed?
Oh, I'll be back and forth. I spend so much time building up what I have in Ireland, friendships and work, and I do love what I do here, and I love my friends, and I like coming back. I'm totally up for a new adventure, but I also want to keep one foot here.
Yeah, and it's also near enough that you can.
It is, totally. Yeah. And I like the idea of sort of living in two countries, so I'll be back and forth a lot. Colleen and I are, you know, experimenting with new formats as well. Well, maybe I'll drag him over to the Netherlands. There's tons of amazing stuff happening over there with rewilding, and the Dutch are creating new islands, especially for wildlife.
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot of stuff over there to talk about. And they always try new things as well. And they don't always work, but I like the idea that they try things, and if it works, then they'll develop it. So we're looking forward to seeing what they're doing, because they have so little nature left in the Netherlands that what they do have, they're managing in a very particular way. And I'm very excited by that and trying to find out how they do it.
Like, I've been to Amsterdam a couple of times. I really love Amsterdam.
It's a lovely country. I mean, the towns are beautiful. They're well looked after. They're just so pretty.
That's actually what my Dutch ex-boyfriend, who I almost married after those 3 days, he was saying that one of the things that he noticed about Dublin was that it's really well loved, but it's not well cared for.
Yeah.
And that's something that I feel you really see the opposite of in the Netherlands. Well, I mean, in a lot of European countries as well.
Yeah.
Like, I'm often struck by just the sheer lack of rubbish.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing. I'm also very struck by the sheer number of clean windows. And I just wonder how our neighbours are going to react to us. So I haven't cleaned the windows in about 8 years in our house.
Yeah, I actually remember a guy called, like when I was living in my old house, I was there for 7 years. I remember a guy called probably about year six and was like, do you want me to clean your windows? And I was like, no, thanks. And I mean, like, he was actually a window cleaner. He was just going door to door. And I was like, no, thank you. And then as he left, I was like, hang on, maybe I should have said yes. It probably would have been a good idea. Yeah. Colette, do you have anything that you'd like to plug or you'd like people to check out other than Science Drops and the Critter Shed podcast available on all your regular podcast networks?
Yeah,
presume?
That's right. Yeah. I'm on Twitter at Red Hair Colette, I think. I'm terrible at knowing my own handle. So I trade
excellent
under
business management.
I trade under Red Hair Media, and it's hair as in the animal. I try to do a few little experimental stuff with animal themed things. And I've done pieces where I brought improv actors together, and we've done little bits about, you know, what would it be like if humans had tails? And then we just do a few skits about that. So all that's
basically
of stuff.
Like the horror film Cats.
God, I've seen the trailer. Oh, I can't unsee it. But
nobody can.
So I've a few bits and bobs on the website there, redhairmedia.ie, if you fancy having a look.
Okay.
And hope you enjoy.
I'll link that all in the show notes. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat to me. And best of luck with your new adventure and Leo's rewilding in the Netherlands.
Yeah, we're all going to be rewilded.
Yeah. Oh, hang on. Are you bringing the cats?
Oh, God, yeah. It's funny. Everyone asked me to bring the cats. They're like, nah, we're just leave them. Of course we're bringing the cats.
You know, a friend of mine lived in Dubai for a couple of years, and she was saying that they have, so basically, like kind of expats in Dubai from the UK or from America or whatever. And she said a lot of the time when they're moving out, you'll see these signs in the apartment blocks that say like free to a good home, like, ugh, you know, two-seater sofa, two armchairs, record player, like things that they can't bring home, cat and like Bichon Frise dog named Sandy kind of thing. Yeah. And she's like, it's so weird. They have such a disposable attitude. Yeah. And obviously, hashtag not all Dubai-based expats, but she said that it's something that you see an awful lot.
Yeah.
Which I can't imagine. Like when I was talking about going to the States, the amount of people are like, are you bringing your dog?
I know.
And I was like, no. What? like my dog who I like cuddle to sleep every single night. Of course I'm bringing my dog. Anyway, thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you very much.
I will link all of your stuff in the show notes and I will chat to you soon. Thank you so much for listening to How to Be Sound. How to Be Sound is produced by Liam Geraghty, radio producer extraordinaire, and his podcast Meet Your Maker is on all good podcast networks. You can also listen to Petrified, a podcast he co-created that won a podcast award at the New York Podcast Festivals or something that I can't quite remember, and you can find them all on the Warren Podcast Network at thewarren.ie and anywhere you get podcasts. Like I said in the beginning, you can sign up to my Patreon, please do, I'm very money hungry, patreon.com/RosemaryMcCabe, and I will catch you next time. I eat an apple. Ihim, ul. Io mangio una mela. Je mange une pomme. I can't remember it in Dutch. What would it be in Spanish? Yo.
How to Be Sound is a member of The Warren, the home of great Irish podcasts, as is my podcast, Meet Your Maker. You'll find them all at thewarren.ie.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.